Welcome back. It's hour number two of Jill on Money. And as if you didn't hear enough about the fiduciary standard from us previously, I have a special guest who's going to talk more about it, but also someone who can talk a little bit more about this concept of fee only versus fee based, and really help to draw the distinction and to understand the differences. So we are delighted to have Mary Malguar, the founder of The Family Firm, Inc. She is a fee-only financial advisor. She's based in Bethesda, Maryland, but she's on vacation and doing the show for us anyway. Mary, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Jill. It's great to be here.
All right. So before we go into the whole reason why you're really on, which is to talk a little bit about fiduciary, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself? How did a nice woman who was living the life in California end up in the D.C. area for all these years?
Well, I was 30 when I moved to Washington, D.C., looking for an opportunity to be in the financial advisory business. And, it just was the right place at the right time. But, you know, at the time in 1981, 82.
Don't date yourself. You can't say that on the air. I'm just kidding.
It was there was no one to go to that wasn't a broker to receive unbiased financial advice. So I saw a great marketing opportunity and stepped into the field.
Okay, and you are a CFP and you have been for a really long time. How has
Right.
that changed the mark CFP? How has that changed in the years since the 80s when you first attained the credential?
Well, I don't think a lot of people know that the whole financial planning movement came about because the sales business, which I never participated in. I came out of an academic side of it, but the sales business said, gee, there are some opportunities to sell more to people. And as a result of, people saying, yeah, but we should do this in a really thoughtful, really appropriate way, the CFP, the Certified Financial Planning Credential, came out of that movement of folks who felt that we should really have a better understanding of what a client really needs. So the CFP started really as a very lightweight certification, but it has really been honed over the years and is a very robust credential, I would say, at this point in time. And I would expect that most people who are seeking financial planning should look for those CFP credentials.
Okay, so got the CFP, you're rocking and rolling. Talk a little bit about this idea that you wanted to provide services that were obviously quite transparent, different, like you said, more of an academic approach. Can you talk a little bit about your participation in the fee-only movement in financial planning, and why is it so important to you?
Right. Well, I got an MBA, and I really during my master's in business, I discovered this field of financial planning, and I started to really do some things for family members, and I thought, this is incredible, but there are so many conflicts that you could have in providing advice to clients. So I really felt that one should step into a position of putting the client's interests ahead of the professional's interests. That is the key in any financial advisory relationship. You need to have, as a client, you need to have the trust that you can, you feel that the professional is putting your interests a bit ahead of their own.
Now, I want to interrupt for one second. Hold on 1 second. I got one quick question for you. So you believe that you got to put the clients first. So when I have said that to people and I talk about fee only versus, say, a different compensation model, a lot of the people will come back to me, like I know CFPs who will say to me, yeah, but that's just the way you charge. It doesn't mean I'm not putting my client first. So can you speak to that? Like you could be, in other words, can you be a client first advisor without being fee only?
Well, the difficult part here is that there are conflicts. Mm-hmm. And when an advisor sells something to a client, they may be selling that or making that recommendation and then selling and collecting the commission on that investment product. And that may be in the client's best interest. But how does the client know? Mm-hmm. And that's the difficult part. So what arose in the industry is this whole movement called fee-only, meaning that the client writes a check in order to know that they're basically paying the advisor to be working for them. And in those situations, in a situation that's called fee-only, the advisor does not sell any products and does not earn any commissions. Now, that, as I said, it's not to say that somebody who does collect a commission isn't working in the client's best interest, but it's very hard to tell. So this sort of leads me to explain that the Institute for the Fiduciary
Hold it. Don't go into that yet. Come on. You're stealing my thunder, Mary.
Okay.
Jeez. We got many segments ahead of us.
There are ways to know.
Okay. So, first of all, I'm just very happy that you are here and that I ran into Mary and our paths crossed because I had met with the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, or NAPFA. I met with some people there because they were wanted to explain to me about fee only. And so that is how our paths have actually crossed.
Right.
And of course, then I started talking a lot about fee only financial advisors. And then I took so much guff from other advisors who said, that is a payment model, that is not, just because I charge a commission or take a commission does not mean I'm not putting my client first. So before we go into the other reason why Mary's here, when we come back from our break, I want to talk a little bit about how you as a client, if you're not working with a fee-only person, how you can start to make sure that you are distilling the information that you're receiving and ask certain pointed questions that might help you avoid those conflicts, which Mary Malguar, our guest, has just laid out. So you're listening to Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Or send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. When we come back, Mary's going to explain exactly the difference between a fee-only and a fee-based and what you should be doing if you're working with a fee-based person to ensure your interests do come first. Jill on Money, we'll be right back.
It's Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Have a question? Call or email anytime, 855-411-JILL, or ask Jill at jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler at 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We are delighted to have Mary Malguar. I'm going to say it like I'm French, Malguar, the founder of the Family Firm, Inc. She is a fee-only financial advisor based in the D.C., Bethesda, Maryland area. And Mary, you are also a past president and chairman of the board of the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. So you're fee-only true and blue, right? Right through, it's like
Correct.
Coursing through your veins, meaning
yes.
that anyone who is part of NAPFA has to not just be credentialed, right? You have to have a CFP,
right.
but you also, don't you have to submit work? Wasn't that like there's a work that
yes.
you have to, like, basically someone's got to look to see, like, you know what the heck you're doing?
Correct. correct.
And you've got to do continuing ed. And right. you are prevented from taking a commission on correct. Any financial product, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Am I missing anything else about NAPFA?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. So now, by the way, this is for real, because Mary served as a legislative representative for NAPFA in the 90s. So you've been doing this for a while, right?
I've had a passion for making sure investors have good advisors forever.
Okay, forever. That's a long time. All right. So before we went to the break, I talked about this. I had talked a lot about, hey, you know, sometimes it's just easier for the client, for the public to say, you know, if I know you're not being compensated for what you sell, it is easier for me to just take the advice to do what you're telling me to do, right? And I think that's what you're saying, that because there are conflicts that exist, it's sometimes just a cleaner model to say, hey, we have vetted these people. They don't take commission. So when someone says, go buy a life insurance policy, that person can't go and then sell you that insurance policy. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, now. Here's a little issue that it has been raised, and that is that a lot of people who listen to the show, they're like, there's like the NAPFA person in my area who I'd love to work with has like, it's a ton of money. So mm-hmm. I want to just work with someone who will charge me, maybe does take a commission, or maybe will buy me, say a term life insurance, or charge me an asset under management fee. Right. How can that person manage the conflict that exists?
Well, everybody has conflicts. We should not say that fee-only advisors are conflict-free. Everybody has conflicts. I'll give you an example for somebody who manages your money and charges you a fee for that. Should I take a mortgage out on my house? Well, mm-hmm. that takes money. That puts money back in there in the portfolio, as opposed to paying cash for your house, right?
Right.
So everybody has a conflict. What is really important for investors is to know that there's a resource out there today, campaignforinvestors.org, that tells them the questions they need to ask of whichever advisor, whoever they work with, whether it's fee-only or fee-based, meaning that they also earn a commission. But this resource is absolutely very powerful. It was put together by the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard, and it has an investor bill of rights on it. It tells investors what they should be asking of their advisor. They should expect a statement on the fees that they have been paying. They should expect that the advisor is credentialed. So it gives them lots of good information that they can take with them to discuss with their advisor.
And what's so cool about this, so this is why Mary and I first, we talked about, you know, coming on the show, is that you are part of the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard. So
right.
That is thefiduciaryinstitute.org. And part of that, and being part of that, you kind of grabbed hold of this concept, which is the campaign for investors, and you helped build out the website. I'm going to put a link to the website on the show notes, everyone. Don't worry. It'll be there.
Right.
Why does this need to exist? We've got regulators, you know, we got the SEC, we got all these different people, we got all these, the CFP board, the FPA. What's different about the campaign for investors?
The campaign for investors evolved from the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard. It is all about being a fiduciary. Everybody out there, the new Department of Labor rules apply to retirement plans. The Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards has its definition of fiduciary. This fiduciary, these set of fiduciary rules came out of a group of financial advisors who said, we want to do the absolute right thing by the client, but we don't want to just say everybody has to be fee-only. So what questions does a investor have to ask their financial advisor in order to know or have the confidence that they can trust this advisor?
And so the easiest question to ask in that respect is, are you registered as a fiduciary? Is that
there is no registered fiduciary credential.
So what do you ask? So what's the right question?
We have an investor bill of rights. For example, there are 9 points here. For example, the advisor is giving me advice based on my personal needs. Somebody has actually looked at my circumstances, my finances, my family circumstances, and has said, based on all of that, here's what I recommend. Mm-hmm. They're also providing you with a statement of how they're avoiding any conflicts that they do have.
Right.
That's another aspect of it.
Because like you said, everyone has a conflict.
Everybody has a conflict. Okay. And they need to explain to you what conflicts they have and how they're managing those.
Okay.
They're controlling the investment expenses. Believe me, even some fee-only planners charge very high expenses. The investor needs to be armed with what's a reasonable expense, and they need to go in and learn. And there are some tools on the campaignforinvestor.org site that helps an investor learn what are they paying now.
Isn't
and
it such a drag?
Go in and discuss that with their advisor.
And isn't it kind of a drag? I'm just going to put it out there because there is no uniform standard, right? Now it's just like one more thing that we're asking people that they've got to deal with, right? In other words, if it wasn't the Department of Labor rule, but it was all financial advisors have to do blank, it would be a lot more, it would be friendlier for the consumer, wouldn't it? Because
yes,
with
be
all
great.
These, right, because we have all these different things and, well, okay, I got to do it for my retirement account, but I don't have to do it for my investment account, or there are all these exceptions. And be that as it may, I know you're happy about Department of Labor, but it is just one piece of the pie. And so what I'd like to do, Mary, when we come back is I love that you have again, we're going to link to the website, to the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard. They've got this really kind of cool best practices and they explain it, and maybe it of course, like Mary said, that you're not registered as a fiduciary, but that there's some language in your engagement agreement that says that the fiduciary standard under the Advisor Act of 1940 and common law principles govern all professional advisory client relationships at all times. Meaning you can't take your fiduciary hat off just because as the advisor, just because it suits you. And there's a big section about fees and what conflicts have to be disclosed and trading rules and all this stuff, which is out there. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what the idea is around fiduciary being spread from the Department of Labor to all accounts. That's from retirement to all accounts. So we're interested in hearing about that from Mary Malguar. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
K, IRAs, refinancing. She covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Broadway is
dark tonight. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. askjill@jillonmoney.com. We're so delighted because we've got Mary Malguar, the founder of The Family Firm, Inc., and basically superwoman, super gal of the entire concept behind fee-only financial planning as well as the fiduciary standard. I think that you should have like a special superpower uniform or something like that that we're going to send to you, Mary, because you are the champion of the fiduciary standard. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, after the Department of Labor is now, taken this idea of applying fiduciary to the folks who are giving advice around retirement accounts, number one, I hear there's a big pushback. Is that going to get watered down legislatively somehow or other?
It's a little bit like the Affordable Care Act. There's lawsuits flying around, but And, you know, depending on what happens politically next year, I think this is going to stick. I think it's a good idea. I think it's been very confusing for folks, financial services firms that have to change the way they do business. And I think they're struggling a little to figure that out. But those who are on the forefront of really being there when everything falls into place, which is next April, I think they're trying as hard as they can and trying to figure out how to comply with the law. So there's a lot of uncertainty right now, but I think it will go forward.
Okay, so we have that. So and there are some. There's a standard that is applying to just retirement accounts. And can you just do a quick explanation? There were some carve-outs around that. In other words, there were some companies or individuals that will not have to adhere to the fiduciary standard when it comes to retirement. What's that all about?
The primary concept in the new Department of Labor rule is that in order to continue to collect a commission as a retirement plan provider, this would be the financial services company that offers your company a retirement plan in your 401k, so a number of mutual funds and so forth. In order to collect a commission on those investments that you can choose to purchase for your plan, they must abide by an agreement to act in the client's best interest. And so that puts them under this concept of a fiduciary principle. So they're not telling you they have to do this, that, and the other thing. They're not being really explicit. They're just saying you have to have a reasonable basis for what you're recommending to clients and or to plan participants, and you must work in the client's best interest. So there are some carve-outs. I am not going to speak to those, but the primary effort here is in what's called the best interest contract exemption, meaning that you are exempt from you can continue to collect a commission mm-hmm. if you are working in the client's best interest.
And so if you have a person who says, I believe it's in my client's best interest to sell a variable annuity inside of an IRA account, even though that, like, honestly, like, there's only like a tiny percentage of the time where that really does right. make sense and it's oversold, but they're going to get lumped in. They're going to be like, oh, no, it's the best interest because I want to have all these features. And I understand that the insurance industry lobbied like the Dickens to make sure that they could be included under the excluded cover, because otherwise they're going out of business, right? I mean, the variable annuities business is going away if they have to actually adhere by a strict fiduciary standard. Is that fair to say?
Two things here. One is you have to be a qualified financial services firm.
Right.
And whether or not an insurance company that sells strictly their own products and only certain products can qualify as a financial firm that's accepted under the Department of Labor rule is a question. So, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's not a question. They may not be accepted, so they may not be allowed to participate. And the second thing is, in order to, let's say, make a recommendation of a variable annuity inside of a 401k, the advisor would have to have a reasonable basis for that recommendation. In other words, they would have to be able to explain in a court of law why that is an appropriate recommendation for that particular investor.
I'd love
Those,
to put...
That's a higher bar.
And boy, I'd like to put that person up in a court of law or whatever, just like in an arbitration against someone like you or Gary Schatzky or somebody who's actually really well versed, because I feel like sometimes I get like these hate mail from insurance guys, right? And I know you can hardly believe it, right, Mary? I mean,
right.
That someone would take the time to write such hate mail to me. But they'll say, like, you know, well, there's always an instance where this is actually a reasonable expectation. And it's almost like getting back to our earlier point, which is it's not that it's the worst thing every single time. It's just that because it is so oversold, it almost would be easier to be like, show me, write a thesis on why this is actually acceptable rather than allowing them to sell it to so many people where it's clearly not. So that's my two cents. I know they lobbied hard and there had to be a deal that was put out. When we come back with Mary Malgoire, I want to say it that way, even though you probably say Malgoire, we're going to talk about the newest trend in financial advice, which is I want to talk a little bit about robo-advisors and how does the robo-advisor, we get tons of questions on this every week, is the robo-advisor a fiduciary or not? Will that, can an algorithm adhere to a fiduciary standard? Is that something that we need to think about going forward? How are we going to adapt this rule and this these principles as technology becomes a bigger force? So that's what we're going to do when we come back. You're listening to Jill on Money. The phone number here is 855-411-JILL. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. If you miss any part of this interview with Mary, you want to go back over the weekend, or you want to find links to the campaign for investors, go to jillonmoney.com, and we'll link up to all this great stuff Mary's talking about. When we return, more with Mary Malgoire. It's Jill on Money. We'll be right back.
Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Want to get in touch? Call or email any day, anytime. 855-411-JILL or askjill@jillonmoney.com. Just because you
find yourself. You're back with Jill on Money. We are so happy we've got a special guest, Mary Malgoire. She is the founder of the Family Firm, Inc. It's a fee-only financial advisory firm in Bethesda, Maryland. But she's also on the show because she has done something really cool, been participating in the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard and helped create a website called Campaign for Investors. And so if you go to thefiduciaryinstitute.org/campaignforinvestors, you'll see all this really cool stuff, including best practices, which I think is something that is really kind of interesting for those people who maybe don't understand how big a deal this idea of the fiduciary standard is. And Mary, you know, I guess that you're probably hopeful that the Department of Labor is the first step, but and then, you know, the fiduciary standard is applied broadly across any financial advice. How do you see the advent of the robo-advisor mixing with the fiduciary standard? What's your feeling around that?
Yeah, the robo movement is very interesting. First of all, it tells us that the internet is making a huge difference in how financial advice is delivered. It is bringing down costs, as you know, and many investors know. Robo advisors are probably the lowest cost vehicle for getting into an investment plan. And that's great because costs are a huge issue. You know, as we all have heard, John Bogle at Vanguard has told us that, you know, what we leave on the table, we can be leaving, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, you know, going to our investment firm as opposed to staying in our retirement pocket. So it's very important that fees are considered, and robos have done that. Where I think robos are being challenged is in the other, you know, aspect of being a fiduciary, which is to make recommendations that are in the client's best interest. Mm-hmm. So to give you an example, let's say you have some money to invest and you go to a robo-advisor, you go to a robo-situation, and they take your, you know, $50,000 or $100,000 and they invest it. What they don't know necessarily is that you have a serious illness and perhaps you shouldn't be in a 30-year bond.
Uh-huh.
So
right.
there's a lack of knowledge about what's reasonable, what's in the best interest of the client in that situation. So what's happening now is robos are starting to put in place questionnaires, even in some cases, live, you know, speak with an advisor kind of alternatives, so that they can capture those personal circumstances. But they do not generally do the kind of analysis that a financial planner would do. Can you retire? How much more money do you need to save to get to retirement? That kind of thing. They're just all mostly concerned with investing the money.
Okay. And so if you don't need financial advice, and I bet that you would probably say that most people do need financial advice, but that said, if you don't think you do and you're just talking about investing, then the robo is fine. What is your view then on, say, the hybrid model, which, I mean, essentially is the Vanguard model, right, where you have some, like you said, some combination of having an algorithm help with the investing, but a human being to help with the planning, as a lower cost alternative? Because, again, we have so many people in this country who, you know, they don't have $5,000 to meet a minimum of a fee-only planner. So
right.
is that a good intermediate step for people?
The short answer is yes, but I think that in any situation you go into, whether it's you know, a real live advisor behind a desk, you walk into their office or you work with them online, whether it's a Vanguard kind of more automated system, but they have a person behind the desk, whatever it is, I think it's important that you know exactly what your cost is.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know what the service is, because a lot of people, you know, is 1.5% a lot or a little?
Mm.
We don't know. We don't know until we know, are they getting full financial planning for that? Are they getting just an occasional call every couple of years from a broker? That's a lot if that's what they're getting from
right.
from their advisor. So you have to know, and again, on the website, campaignforinvestors.org, we have a table that tells you what you should pay. What you should be paying for the various services, tells you how to go get your fees and calculate what's going on in your investment account. So fees are a big part of this, but, you know, short answer is yes, having a financial advisory relationship where there is some analysis done is a good idea.
Mary Malguar, thank you so much for joining us. Mary is the founder of The Family Firm, Inc., a fee-only financial advisory firm, but more importantly, she's here talking about the fiduciary standard and the work that she has done, which is pretty awesome stuff. We're going to make sure we have all the links to it from the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard and Mary's website, The Campaign for Investors. Not really her site, but she really did help develop it. Mary, thank you for joining us during your vacation yet. You're the best. You're listening to Jill on Money. We'll have links to all this stuff and Mary's website as well. 855-411-JILL. That's our phone number. Send us an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger. And if you missed any part of our interview with Mary Malguar, you can just hop onto our website, jillonmoney.com. And we're going to link to the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard. But we're also going to make sure that we have a special link for you for some of the consumer issues that Mary raised. The Campaign for Investors is something the Institute launched just in the last couple of months. And, you know, look, you might think this is crazy because there seems to be a lot of different people. We've had the head of the CFP board on. We've had people from the Financial Planning Association. Mary is from NAPFA, the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. A lot of alphabet soup here. I get it. But I think that Mary's point is a really good one, which is You know, the idea behind fiduciary is really that there are always going to be conflicts that exist. And the fiduciary standard is really about making sure that advisors, regardless of the fee structure, are putting your interest first, right? And one of the things about the fiduciary standard, which is kind of tough, is that, and you know, Mary said, like, it's not like a simple yes or no question, like, hey, are you a fiduciary? Well, yeah, I am. But then there are a whole bunch of different pieces of this that are really sort of follow-up best practices. And that, I think, is something that's kind of, I don't know, like, it's an important piece. They have 6 core fiduciary duties for financial advisors. And here they are. Serve the client's best interest. Act in utmost good faith. Act prudently with the care, skill, and judgment of a professional. Avoid conflicts of interest. Disclose all material facts. Control investment expenses. That's what you're looking for. All right, it's another great show. Thanks again to Mary for joining us, and thank you for listening. We will see you next week. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Head over to jillonmoney.com if you want more. And you can always send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll see you next week.